Canucks Central at noon.
Now works into the high slot and shoots. He scores. Quinn Hughes in overtime. And he's the leading rookie scorer in the NHL.
Your Vancouver Canucks live here.
Pacioretty cut into the slot. Forced wide by Tannen. Play back to the back door. And Markstrom absolutely stoned Paul Stastny.
On the home of hockey, Sportsnet 650.
What is up? Welcome to Canucks Central. Vic Nizar and Dan Riccio with me today on a rainy Wednesday, but we certainly need some precipitation after the last couple of weeks. So I welcome a little bit of rain, but it's not dampening our moods here. Big day. Game three, obviously, of the Stanley Cup Final. Going tonight, you can listen to that on Sportsnet 650 at 5 o'clock. And Reach, we actually had a transaction today.
We did. It seems kind like of. It almost got through, but I mean,
but even if it doesn't go through, like we there was clear and obvious intent, and we have something to talk about. Is basically what I'm saying.
It wasn't. Well, I mean, it involved the GM we talked about quite heavily yesterday, and it confirmed a lot of what we thought yesterday, that this particular general manager is mad bruv. You know, he is just all over the place with his moves, always getting people fired up, always getting a lot of shade being thrown at him via Twitter. But Jim Rutherford, GM of the Penguins, guy won back-to-back Stanley Cups. He's kind of allowed to do whatever he wants, and he goes out and does whatever the heck he wants sometimes. And it was another puzzling move for me from a Penguins perspective, trading Patrick Hornqvist potentially for Mike Matheson.
But yeah, that's the deal. And to my knowledge, we haven't seen anything else of as far as, you know, salary retention, any sort of draft pick. So I'm operating under the guise that it's one for one at this stage, and there are money implications in this. Essentially, in the short term, the Penguins shave about $1 million and some change off of their salary cap, and also save themselves on a little bit of short-term cash as well, which is one of the things that we've heard that is some of their motivations for this upcoming season. So Mike Matheson is a 4.875 cap hit. Patrick Hornqvist is a 5.3. So cap hit wise, not much of a savings, but actual cash. So it remains 5.3 for Patrick Hornqvist. And this coming season, it's $3.5 million of real cash towards Mike Matheson. So they save, what is that, $1.8 million of real cash. And the cap hit savings is marginal, about 500 grand, but this is what we've been talking about, right? Yeah. Like, teams are going to cut corners and find creative solutions. It's Pittsburgh that's running the gauntlet right now of being on the lead of all these moves, but there's an expectation these types of moves may happen with greater frequency coming soon.
Yeah, and a lot of it is just about shifting money where you can, and maybe, like, I think most people still look at, you know, the next 3 years or the next couple of years are going to be tough, but, you know, things will start to rise when it comes to the salary cap and things like that as time goes on, as we begin to recover from this pandemic. So you're kind of delaying your costs for a little bit in order to shave as much as you can now. Because from a hockey perspective, Bic, like, does this move make a lot of sense to you? For me, I've never been the biggest Matheson fan. I think we were all shocked when he got the 8-year contract from Dale Tallon, and everybody's like, "Wait, who got a 8-year contract? Like, who is this?" And now, you know, he was certainly not in Quenneville's good books towards the end of the season for Florida and into the return to play. Patrick Hornqvist is still a solid player when he's on the ice, which is a big concern. But when he's on the ice, Patrick Hornqvist is Steph, definitely at least still a third line player and helps out your top power play unit by just being that net front guy.
Well, I think that's the element here that I look at that deal of, okay, Hornqvist is 34 years old. Like, there's a lot of mileage. Like, he's a really strong player, I would agree with you. But there is a lot of mileage on his game. He's played through some very tough playoff series. And, you know, it isn't necessarily the healthiest guy. And I think if you're looking to pay that money out, it's, you know, can we get a bit more certainty in someone that's going to be available to you? Now, like, I'm with you. Like, is Mike Matheson the end-all be-all? Probably not. It's one of the most puzzling contracts across the league, his deal that has 6 years remaining. So, like, in the short term, they do save cash. But in the long term, they've taken on a significant amount more. It's $32 million remaining in total on Mike Matheson's contract. Patrick Hornqvist has 15.9 remaining. So they've, you know, locked themselves in for another $16 million. That's the puzzling part to me. It's the long-term prognostication. The short term, I get it. The finances, and this isn't a hockey-motivated move. But, yeah, it's at best case scenario, they made a neutral hockey move. Like, if you get the best version of Mike Matheson and you didn't get a lot of production out of Patrick Hornqvist, like actual games played, I still think this at best is a neutral kind of move.
Yeah, from what we're hearing with Elliot Friedman, it's something to do with the insurance that's holding this up. So, and whether or not a player would get paid in full for that. So, at least that's been some of the reports. So it is that sort of thing that again reaffirms that money is key right now. And if you're going to have a player that ends up on injured reserve and you still have to pay that player, it's not going to be covered fully by insurance. That's going to be an issue for owners. You know, you look back into trade history and that was the motive for the Columbus Blue Jackets taking David Clarkson from the Maple Leafs in exchange for Nathan Horton. He didn't have full insurance on his deal with the Jackets. And so they were paying a guy not to play, basically. They were paying him while injured rather than the insurance company paying him. And so they were just like, we'd rather have a warm body than have to pay this guy who's out injured and likely never going to play again for our team. So that can be a factor in how this all works out. And it again points to the money. So the bottom line is, what does this mean, Bic, for the rest of the league? Now that we're seeing another move where cash is king, you're having to put your product on the ice as maybe not your first priority, but the dollars and cents of it all is number one for a lot of owners.
Yeah, the immediate move here, as far as the Canucks perspective, if you're listening, text in 650-650, your thoughts on the transaction and more of your plans for what the Canucks could do in the offseason. There's two direct impacts as far as the Penguins and the Canucks. One is we spent all day yesterday talking about a report out of Pittsburgh talking about how they're interested in Chris Tanev. So I think people here's immediate reaction is, okay, does this take them out of the running for Tanev? And I think it's twofold because part of it is they've shaved money off of their cap and also, you know, real cash spending. They've shaved that off.
And the report did say that Rutherford was trying to clear cap space so that he can offer Tanev of this type of a contract.
Yeah. And if you're making the leap of conclusion of, well, they just acquired a D-man, Matheson's a left-handed D-man, and Tanev, as you know, is a right-handed D-man. The other part that kind of – because it is kind of getting crowded in Pittsburgh now because They've got Chris Letang, they've got Brian Dumoulin, Marcus Pettersson, who I'm a big fan of, and John Marino, big fan of, and Jack Johnson, and now potentially Mike Matheson. It's getting a bit crowded. You're thinking, okay, how does Chris Tanev fit in there when they got Marino and they got Letang? Like, I'm curious if their cap savings their intention also extends to Chris Letang. I'm just curious if that's something that we'll hear more and more of in the next couple of deals. And, you know, we'll wait and see how this, if this deal even transpires. But Tanev to me still looks like a fit in Pittsburgh. Should that be their intention? Today's move doesn't really say to me, or today's proposed move today doesn't really say to me that that's out of the question.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm Sidney Crosby, I'm kind of wondering like what Jim Rutherford's up to here. Like we've got a D with left side D with Jack Johnson and Mike Matheson on it now. How's this computing here? But the point on Letang is interesting. We talk about the cash dollars of it all, and we've heard his name go through the rumor mill quite a bit over the last number of years. And he's 33 now, and in real cash dollars is still owed over $14 million, $14.5 million over the next two seasons. That is a big, big ticket if you are going to move on from Letang. And also another player that, while when he's on the ice, he still provides value and is still a bit of an offensive dynamo, how often is he on the ice has been the question for Chris Letang quite a bit.
656, Steve Chapman, with your thoughts. The other impact of this is, hey, so you saw a potential money move. And again, this isn't, it's not final. See a couple of texts coming in and saying like, hey, it's not a trade yet, for sure. But it's been reported, and by all accounts, it was, the holdup was an insurance issue. That's where we are right now. But the intent, we can discuss that part of, hey, this was a proposed deal that could have gone through. And we'll wait to see if it actually does go through. But that does open up the idea of, okay, people are moving money around. And the guy everyone looks at in this city is Louis Erickson. And if, like where did you stand, Reek, on the Mike Matheson contract as far as contracts across the league that couldn't be moved?
It had to be in the top, like, 10% for sure.
Right? We sat here a couple of days ago, maybe last week, when we heard a report that Florida wants to move out one of their big money D-men, and we sat there and I said, okay, Yandel's got a no-move clause. Strawman's got a modified no-trade clause, but they're both 34 years old. What is necessarily the appetite for those guys? Yandel, I'm a bit more intrigued by, but Strawman, you know, I liked his game. Where is it at right now? Remains to be seen. But Matheson, and we talked about Aaron Ekblad, it's, you know, that's probably the one that could get moved out, because Matheson was the one I looked at and said, who's taking on $32 million for another 6 years for a guy who was getting healthy scratched? And, you know, best case scenario is probably like a number five D-man. Who's taking on that money? And now we see it can get moved. So this idea that Louis Erickson can't get moved, I'm done thinking that. This was a wake-up call for everyone today thinking, oh, no one's taking on Louis Erickson's. No, if the money makes sense, you can find a partner. Now, the question is, what money makes sense, right? So just to lay this out once again, it's $5 million remaining on his contract for a cap hit of $6 million per year for the next 2 years.
Yeah.
Given what we saw today, that does feel like there's a certain level of attraction. But, like, this is the type of move we're talking about. It's Matheson for Hornqvist. It's nothing's going to be revolutionary. Just because we say, hey, this contract for Louis Erickson might be more attractive, doesn't mean you're suddenly getting a top four D-man or something like that. We're talking about attractive in the sense of dollars.
Exactly. And he's been paid a $3 million signing bonus already, so his salary for this year is just $1 million. And you better believe that teams are looking at savings for this immediate season that is happening right now. And that's, you know, as much as I've thought about this, I do go back to a conversation we had with Chris Johnston a week ago on Reach Deep, and I asked him, you know, is Louis Erickson's contract more tradable because of these circumstances that we've just talked about? And at the time, he did say he thinks that's a deep reach. I'm quoting him, by the way. But it really was.
Band is strong. That's great.
So I do wonder if, you know, there is still a lot of hesitancy towards taking on that deal. But the other part of this is what Jim Benning has said, and another thing he said on Reach Deep, and that is he's not willing to part with draft picks in order to move money, at least not first and second round picks. And that's likely what it would take for somebody to take on Louis's cap hit right now. So now the last resort, Bick, is finding a player that, in a situation where they're looking to move out money, real cash, and then finding a player with a similar cap hit, I guess, that has a lot more dollars left, and but maybe is more suitable or could be more valuable to the Canucks than Louis Erickson currently is. Those are the situations you have to look for, and there really aren't many. Like, how many would you say are around the league? Maybe 5 to 7. So I still think it's a low percentage chance that the Canucks actually do find a partner for Louis Erickson.
Yeah, I would put it at somewhere of 25% chance, 30% chance.
Well, it's higher than me.
Right. Okay. But like, I think I'm more amenable to crazier ideas, right? I think my list of potential candidates I would bring in is probably higher than, you know, like what were you saying, 5 to 7 guys?
Yeah.
I think I might go close to 15 guys and we can kind of get into them. But well, I do look at it and I say, like,
the wild card too is how many teams are really looking to shed cash?
Yes. Yeah.
We don't know exact numbers on that.
Yeah. That's the big issue. But again, we're talking about just trading bad money for bad money. That's what we're talking about here. And are there enough candidates around the league that if someone in this scenario was looking at, hey, you know what, we do have this long-term deal. Do you think you have value out of this guy? Like, could the Canucks acquire a Mike Matheson? I don't mean that style of player or a D-man, just that style of contract where it is 6 years, long-term. And you're willing to take on more cash for a longer-term project. I think there are enough candidates around the league that you look at and say, yeah, okay, that's something that they could do.
This text, love the show. Well, we appreciate that. Thank you. Thank you. Do you guys think of Erickson and the Canucks trading for Phil Kessel? Love to hear what you guys think. That is one of the options. And
I think that's, like, too high.
Right.
Like, I think you're aspiring to something too high. Like, Phil Kessel, I understand that it's a lot of money. I think it's $14 million over the next 2 years and $8 right. million. But I think the quality of player is too good.
So his, yeah, and
because if you're Arizona, you're moving Phil Kessel, you're going to have plenty of suitors.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, Phil Kessel is, I mean, I had thought, and a lot of us were making the jokes on hockey Twitter of just Phil Kessel's really gonna coast his last couple of years of his contract in Arizona, and his first year in Arizona did literally nothing to change my mind about that. So yeah, I do wonder about his give a bleep meter. I think there's other options that I would actually prefer more. And yeah, you're right. Arizona might even want some extra on top of that to make that kind of a deal happen. So, no, I don't necessarily think Phil Kessel would rank high on my list, but you are on the right track. That is kind of the type of deal that we'd have to talk about here if you are going to pull off a Louis Erickson move.
This one's from Jay Fidd. A text coming in. Louis for Johnny Boychuk. Plug in a bottom pair right-handed D-man. And look, that's... like, that's kind of what we're talking about, right? That's not a great contract, and I'm not a big Johnny Boychuk fan, but, like, I agree. That's kind of the realm that you should be looking at of what potential deals may look like. And this text coming in as well. Louis is a good cash transaction with actual money left to be paid out. So it may actually be harder to move on from Louis as it is acquiring his money and might have a say on it. That's from Brandon in Coquitlam. And look, the money aspect from the ownership group is important, which is why we've had the conversation the last 3 weeks of what are the intentions here? It's important to find out if there's a willingness to be a cap team. And by all accounts, there is a willingness to be a cap team. Now, does that matter in getting to 81.5 on the cap, or does that matter in spending $81.5 million? And that's the conversation. And by all accounts, you know, it doesn't feel like the cash spending has been restricted.
Yeah, and there's a difference between being a cap team and where your cash is. You know, like the Leafs are the extreme example where they were paying what, over $90 million in actual salary last year with all the guys that they had on LTIR. And there's other teams that, you know, use inflated cap numbers with less cash to get up to the salary floor. So there's a lot of different ways you can go about this, but yes, being a cap team isn't the same as, you know, being willing to spend as you wish. And I don't think the Canucks are in that type of scenario, Bic.
No. And hey, let's just go through some names here of guys that I've thought of that might be potential candidates. Like PK Subban is one. If you could do some cap retention from New Jersey's point of view, right? It's a $9 million cap hit, but it's $16 million over the next 2 years. Where are they at? And is that an organization that you look at and say, ah, maybe we do want to save a handful of dollars, right? It's you'd save about $11 million if you're the New Jersey Devils, and I'm sure that's something that would be attractive. And he's had a tough go of it, obviously, in New Jersey, and a lot of people are questioning where's his timeline at in his career. But like that's the type of move we're talking about, right? It's similar to the Johnny Boychuk one, where it's more money and you're probably getting someone in your bottom pair. But that's kind of what we're talking about, and maybe you get a redemption story out of it.
So the other thing about the Islanders and the Johnny Boychuk thought is the Islanders really need to shed cap because they've got to sign Pulak, they've got to sign Barzal, they've got to make some moves to lessen their cap hit that is currently there. So making a Louis for Johnny Boychuk move doesn't really do them a lot of good in the immediate term. Devils are interesting. And I think the other part of this that is interesting is if teams are asking to add a bit of a sweetener, what would that be? Because I think we all look at sweetener, you immediately think draft pick. We know Jim Benning isn't willing to do that, already has spent his first and second round pick this year. So then you get into the idea of, is Jake Virtanen a sweetener? Is Troy Stetcher something you would tack on to Louis Erickson to make sure a deal gets done? Maybe it's one of your B or C prospects that another team looks at, like maybe a Cole Lind or something to that effect. Are you going to be willing to do that to make one of these moves happen? Because I find it hard to think that there's a one-for-one deal out there for Louis.
Yeah, it's like those are harder to come by. It also depends on what you're trying to accomplish this offseason, right? If you're trying to do it for a player, which is what we're talking about here, what role do you see them for, right? Like a name I brought up just to, as far as sake of conversation, is like a Kyle Turris, right? If you're looking for a upgrade on Adam Gaudette as your play driving third center, is a name like Kyle Turris intriguing to you? Now that's $24 million over 4 years and a $6 million cap hit. It's $19 million of savings for Nashville, but can you accomplish something where you, or like make a trade where you accomplish one of your goals this offseason of, hey, is there a play driving third line center we can acquire? It's a high price to pay, but is that something you can accomplish? Or is that a name to you that intrigues you?
Well, and then...
Or like a Tyler Johnson is another name that's been mentioned.
And are you extending your problem in that situation, Bic, where now you've got a $6 million cap hit, not just for the next 2 years, but for the next 4 years? And so that's something I think a lot of people would put their nose up towards, and I've mentioned it too with James Van Riemsdyk. You know, that's another move where Philly would save over $10 million in actual cash, well over that, and also $1 million of a cap hit for some guys that they've got to re-sign as well. And James Van Riemsdyk through the playoffs was a healthy scratch at times. But I still think there's a lot left in the tank there with JVR. I think that would be a player that really solidifies your top six if you're the Canucks, and is an upgrade over Tanner Pearson, bumps him down the lineup, maybe makes him a bit more of a trade asset if you want to go down that road. So it's finding unique situations that make the Louis situation better. And by that account, maybe take on more risk in the longer term as well.
Bins from Langley texting in. All these deals sound like bust for bust. Not a lot of point in making any of these deals. We're almost rid of Louis. Patience is a virtue. Again, from Bins and Langley, 650, 650. And yeah, like, look, that's kind of what we're talking about. It is bust for bust for to some element, but is there different upside that you can get out of it, right? Because the Canucks are in a stage where they're not getting anything out of Louis Erickson as far as the on-ice product, right? It's he can fill in, obviously, from time to time. But if you're able to get a guy who can play certain amount of games and minutes in a role, like, again, just mentioning a potential Kyle Turris, Turris outlook, is there's value in doing that, is you would get X amount of games from someone that in your top nine. Now, the other part of this, too, that's interesting is, and, you know, CJ joined, said so over the weekend when he joined Alex Blair and Israel Fair on air, you know, Sportsnet 650. It's like there's so many balls in the air. Like, no team might have as many balls in the air than Vancouver. And this is why we've talked about what moves comes first. It's so important. Because if you did, okay, let's say you just made a trade like this and you got a third line center. Sweeteners, whatever, just put that aside. End of the day, the Canucks get a third line center. Well, that changes the implication. Okay, at what cost do you get that third line center? Is it a $6 million guy? Okay, so that's $6 million that you have now on your third line. What are you going to do as far as giving money to Tyler Toffoli? What are you going to do as far as Brandon Sutter? If I told you, like, when I say that name Kyle Turris, and you know $6 million cap hit, it's like, well, that's a lot of money for your third line center pick. Okay, but what if I told you you're also getting rid of Brandon Sutter and Jay Beagle because you got now a $6 million third line center? All these things are intertwined here.
Yeah, and it's finding unique ways to use that cap hit of those players and make a move that might make more sense for your roster right now. And that's the hard part that Jim Benning has right now. We've talked about Jim Rutherford and how active he's been. He's clearly a guy that's aggressive. He wants to be the first on the market to get things done, and he's always been that way. Seems like a lot of other GMs are still trying to weed their way through this, and I do wonder if being aggressive is the way to go. Obviously, Jim Rutherford, I don't agree necessarily with the moves that he has made, but there is something to the idea of I'm going to be the first one to get things done so that I make sure that I do get things done that I need to before these opportunities dry up. And there's a real risk of that happening.
Good text coming in. Keep them coming in. 650, 650. We'll try to get to them all. And also, we did want to touch on a couple of things that Elliot Friedman talked about yesterday, about the goalie market and obviously where the Canucks' priorities lie coming up this off season. We'll touch on it all coming up here on Canucks Central. Bick Nizar, Dan Riccio on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Now more of Canucks Central on the official home of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Canucks Central, Bick Nizar, Dan Riccio here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Thanks for making us part of your day. A long text here. We'll try to read it all here. This one's from Kevin, 650, 650. Hey, guys, I actually really like trying to land Kyle Turris. He allows the possibility if one of your top centers gets hurt to slide right in. And I think there would be some interesting trades that you could make with Nashville. You could send Sutter and possibly a lower prospect. Then you can turn around and trade Erickson and Vertanen and maybe Beagle as a package to someone like New Jersey or Montreal, taking back one of their bad contracts. That way it allows you to shed a little bit of cap space, plus maybe give yourself enough money to land someone like Petrangelo. I don't believe the Canucks won't be able to match the Pittsburgh offer for Tanev, and I do believe best course of action is to let Markstrom walk, even if it is to Calgary. Or do you do a trade Besser and Vertanen for Goudreau? That way it would finally give Bo Horvat someone to play with who is an unbelievable passer. That's from Kevin. So a lot going on there, Kevin. The Petrangelo is kind of where you lose me because I don't picture the Vancouver Canucks going big game hunting necessarily in the free agent market. I know exactly what you're talking about is if you open up the space, then you can do so. Spending that amount of money, because we're talking about $8.5-9 million reach and for term. I don't know if that's in the cards for the Vancouver Canucks, considering what's looming here coming soon for Jim Benning.
Yeah, and you always have to wonder what the player wants as well. Does Pietrangelo want to come out to Vancouver on that kind of a move? I mean, if the money's there, sure, why not? But I don't think that is the road that Jim Benning and the Canucks are going to go down right now. And the idea of Turris is interesting. Derek Stepan is another name that I have flagged as a potential fit. Now, yeah, that's going to be a harder deal to make. He doesn't have a ton of cash left, and he's on a one-year deal, so it might actually be attractive for Arizona to keep him around. But I think the third-line center spot is a question mark for the Canucks because, yeah, we're still wondering where Adam Gaudette's ceiling is and if he can be or how is he still going to be developing his two-way play, because so far it hasn't really been there. He's had to play very sheltered minutes in that role and has still had defensive struggles relative to how he has been utilized and been deployed. So there's question marks there, and I bet that, you know, on the list of priorities, looking for a third line center option is probably on Jim Benning's list, but he's got other priorities ahead of it first.
650, keep the thoughts coming in. Do want to touch on a couple of things Elliot Friedman said yesterday when he joined myself and Sat Shaw on the program. Because, look, it's all trending towards the decisions that have to be made from the free agents, Tyler Toffoli and Jacob Markstrom, what's going on there? And Elliot did kind of touch on the goalie market as a whole. And, you know, I kind of asked him, is Jacob Markstrom kind of holding up the goalie market? Is he the most coveted goalie, not just free agent, just on the market, whether it be by trade? We've talked about Darcy Kuemper. We've talked about Matt Murray and Marc-Andre Fleury. And you know, like, I think maybe you can throw Henrik Lundqvist's names in the mix as well if they want to not have three goalies next year. Here's Elliot talking about the Canucks' potential philosophy when it comes to Jacob Markstrom.
You know, there's teams looking for goalies out there that probably aren't going to do Markstrom.
Is Edmonton's looking for a goalie? Do you think they're on Markstrom? Probably not. It's based on what you can afford and what you're willing to do. Kemper's contract is 2x4.5, right? That's going to be cheaper than signing Markstrom. The problem with that is that you have to give up a lot to get it. Some teams will look at it like, okay, Markstrom doesn't cost us anything except the contract. But, you know, like, it's bigger than Kemper's numbers. But Kemper costs you more in terms of assets. So, look, I think there's teams out there, and you can pick them, that are in the Markstrom conversation if we get there. Like, I think Detroit would be, for one. And I think you got to think that depending on what Calgary decides to do, they're probably there. And there's others. There's no question about it. But I think all things being equal, he wants to be a Canuck. At this point in time, are the Canucks just in a position where they've got a philosophy on what they're willing to do here? And it's not about the best offer not yet being there. It's about they've got a philosophy and they're not willing to bend on that philosophy.
So I'll pose two questions to you. Reach one, because that quote there from Elliot talking about all things being equal, he wants to be a Canuck, is really interesting. But number one, do you think Jacob Markstrom is holding up the goalie market? And number two, maybe we can unpack this, is if Edmonton's not a Markstrom destination because they don't want to spend that much, we can kind of look at who potentially would be the teams that want to spend to that level, and also would they be attractive destinations for Jacob Markstrom?
So I do think that Markstrom and to a lesser extent Robin Lehner are holding up the goalie market. And as long as the two top guys are on the market and still undecided, then you're not going to have teams targeting their next level. Because it's a market setter, right? And when we heard Leonard's contract has been verbally agreed 5x5, you know, that immediately sent us spinning into a, well, Markstrom's got to be in and around that number. That's kind of a benchmark number for Markstrom, isn't it? And yet we haven't seen those dominoes fall just yet. But Markstrom is definitely holding up the market because you have a lot of different conflicting things here. You have Detroit, who might be thinking, Steve Yzerman's thinking, we got to build from the net out, and Jacob Markstrom's my guy. And if I have to overpay for him, then so be it. So that could definitely be a thing. All of these other markets that are looking to solidify their goaltending position, they're looking at Markstrom, especially the ones that want to be really aggressive. But those in that second tier, they're waiting to see how the chips fall before going for their preferred asset. And one of those guys might be Anton Udobin, but Markstrom's deal, I think, comes first before you start to see other deals happen after it.
And which, by the way, like, go figure, of who's controlling the goalie or who's controlling the market, right? It's potentially the two highest profile cases. And we kind of alluded to this months ago when we talked about it would get to this stage because one agency represents a lot of these goalies, right? It benefits the agency. We're talking about Newport here. It benefits them to delay this as long as possible because you're going to get the best offers from Vegas in regards to Leonard, Markstrom in regards to the Canucks, and just across the league. Is if you delay this as close as you can to free agency, and if both guys' intentions are to stay, well, you can really make everyone sweat this out and then get the best offer, right? We've heard the rumored verbal agreement 5x5. Well, it hasn't been signed yet, so we can't operate under the conclusion that that's done.
Exactly. And until that happens, you know, Markstrom is probably waiting. And you wait to see, you know, what kind of clauses are in there too. Like, if he got a no-move clause, I should get a no-move clause. If, you know, the bonus structure, how that all works out, all these different types of things, the minutiae of the contract comes into play too for these guys at the top of the market, and they want to see how other guys are doing it to make sure that they're getting theirs as well. And I think that's certainly part of it. But both things on the Markstrom front, by what I can gather and how I'm reading the tea leaves, with less inside knowledge than others for sure, and I'll admit that, but it's Markstrom's waiting it out because he thinks and probably knows the best deal that he's going to get from the Canucks is not yet on the table. And the longer he waits, the more likely he is that he gets that. So until Markstrom has a sense of what the best offer from Jim Benning is going to be, he's not making a decision, Vic.
It does feel like we're playing one big game of chicken here, right?
Yeah.
Like, who blinks first, right? Is it the Markstrom camp and all the dominoes have to fall on their end in relation to the goalie market? Is it the Canucks who say, okay, now we're ready to give you the best offer? Or is it another team who goes out and acquires a Marc-Andre Fleury, who goes out and acquires a Tristan Jarry, who, by the way, is a restricted free agent also under the same agency as Markstrom and Lehner as well? Or is it Matt Murray gets traded? Is it Henrik Lundqvist? Whatever it is, there are destinations here. But let's kind of unpack this, because it was interesting that Elliot said, you know, doesn't really see Markstrom as a destination for the Oilers. So who are potentially the needy goaltending teams? And I'm just going to go kind of through this division by division. And you tell me if I'm right or wrong here. So Buffalo, Detroit, Toronto.
Yeah.
Those all check out. Carolina.
Yes.
Chicago. Colorado.
I don't know about Chicago.
Is that it?
Yeah, but that's pretty much it. And Calgary.
And Calgary. Calgary. So that's seven. And Edmonton's a Goldie market, but as we just said, potentially not in. So that's seven teams. But you're already discounting Chicago, and I think I'm there with you as well.
Yeah, Chicago seems like I don't think they would be in that range for a goaltender that big. And Stan Bowman, I mean, you just look at his track record. He's not a guy that pays a lot for a goalie.
It feels like they'd rather bring Corey Crawford back on a reduced deal and then just sign kind of a 1B kind of thing.
Exactly. So
Okay,
go ahead.
No, we're down to six teams, basically,
yeah,
that are potentially willing to spend high end. Now, Buffalo and Detroit are barren wastelands when it comes to actually ready to compete.
You know, if you ever need a good laugh, and we could all use it once in a while here, still in a global pandemic. But just go check out Buffalo's cap friendly page, and trust me, like you'll get a good chuckle out of it. They've got four.
I don't have anyone signed.
They've got four forwards signed. Two of them are Kyle Okposo and Jeff Skinner. It's pretty grim, and they've got four forwards signed to like more than $20 million of cap charge. So it's pretty grim.
And look, I know they have $34 million in cap space. That's great, but like they've got a lot of things to figure out up front.
They've got to sign a whole team.
Yeah. So I don't know how high up the list of priorities Jacob Markstrom is necessarily for them. I get that they want a goaltender, but they got a lot of things to figure out. You know, who's going to play in front of your goaltender before then?
By the way,
like, that's my first question. If I sit down with Buffalo and I'm a goalie, I was like, pay me $12 million. You don't have anyone on the team. I'm going to stop everything.
I'm going to take at least $7 million. Like, this is the conversation that the Canucks were in not that long ago when they had to overpay, throw an extra year of term at guys. And, you know, they did it, and much, you know, to the chagrin of Canucks Twitter, but, you know, they did it for guys like Roussel and Beagle, and that's how they landed those players, by giving them an extra year of term than they were getting pretty much anywhere else. But, you know, that's what Buffalo and Detroit are going to have to do for Markstrom. And if you're the Canucks, that's, you know, that's potentially an extra $6 or $7 million that is going to be tough for you to match. And that's when, you know, the dollars become more significant in Jacob Markstrom's decision, if Buffalo and Detroit are as serious about chasing a top goaltender as reports suggest them to be.
As we're making fun of how many guys Buffalo has signed, just a heads up, Detroit has three D-men signed, and one of them is Alex Biega, who, like, I'm a big fan, but, like, you know, you kind of know what he is.
Come on, and, guys.
Like, they've got bigger things to figure out before they get to goaltending. So it's great to hand out that offer, but again, I don't know how attractive those destinations are, no matter how much you're getting paid. Because you're going to be on the back end of a lot of rubber, right? And if this is why the priorities and the intentions of what Jacob Markstrom wants to accomplish are also interesting. But I just don't look at those places of, oh yeah, that's the place I want to go right now. So it's basically Toronto, if they move out Freddie Anderson.
Yeah.
It's the Carolina Hurricanes, but they've got money committed to their goaltending right now. But they've got to move guys out. But that would be an interesting destination if they were preparing an offer. And then it's the Colorado Avalanche.
Yeah, and I was just going to say, on Carolina, they've also shown that, you know, they don't want to spend necessarily a ton of money on goaltending. Or at least that's the feel we've gotten. Because they've had chances to go out and spend on guys in that spot, but they've committed to James Reimer and Peter Mrazek, who they've gotten on the cheap. Reimer on a deal from Florida, and Mrazek after he was a cast-off for whatever reason in Detroit.
So if you're looking at why Vancouver has this philosophy of, like, holding a hard line on this negotiation, this is basically what we're talking about. Like, if I'm sitting in Jim Benning's shoes, and look, I get Buffalo can give the big offer, and absolutely Jacob Markstrom can go there. congratulations. But it's going to have to be a big offer. If I'm Jim Benning, I'm saying that's not a credible threat as far as retaining Jacob Markstrom. The credible threats to me are Colorado, because you know they got $22 million in cap space, not a lot of things to figure out. And so it's them, Carolina, Calgary, which you know, you and I have sat here and talked about. I don't know how attractive of a destination that is necessarily, because I look at Monahan and Goodrow, and it's like, you guys are going to have problems up front. Where are you going there? And then it's Toronto. But those are the four teams I would say, can you do it? And I got a text message here saying, hey, what about the Sharks if they move out Jones, obviously? The Sharks have their own kind of cap issues as well.
Yeah.
But like that does exist, I guess, in theory, that they could move out Martin Jones. And is that something they want to go about?
Yeah, and they just signed a Russian kid that they think pretty highly of, Melnichuk, as well. So the Sharks are not spending big on goaltending. They were one team, though, that I thought, hey, if you're going to trade Thatcher Demko for a high second-round pick or maybe a late first, then San Jose might be that spot because, well, they're still looking for a goalie, and they have that late first-round pick that they got from Tampa Bay or their own second-round draft choice, which would be pretty high in the second round. But, yeah, there's like the one wild card is Toronto, and Chris Johnston mentioned it to us on Reach Deep on Monday that they could be a player. But again, those teams have to move somebody out. Calgary, I think, is the biggest threat because, okay, they've got Gaudreau, they've got Monahan. We know there's some turmoil there. They've talked about change. But if you are going to give this as good a kick at the can as you possibly can, and you are the Calgary Flames, I mean, getting a surefire goaltender is probably the way that you do that, is the best way for you to do that. Because, look, Gaudreau is 2 years away from free agency, and everything suggests that he is not going to re-sign in Calgary. So you're probably giving this one more go at most with Gaudreau before you have to look at trading him next summer.
We'll get out on this. Victor in Surrey says, hi, guys. Ian Clark is the biggest free agent signing. No other team has what Vancouver has. Maybe the best goalie coach in the sport. You don't think that is worth something to Markey if Ian does not extend in Vancouver? I don't think Markey will be too concerned where he gets paid. So Ian Clark's got 1 year left on his deal, is my understanding. But it is something that has to get sorted out, right? It's you want long-term stability there with Ian Clark as well.
It's a organizational advantage that you have over other teams. It's pretty clear from what he's done, not just with his career in Van, but even before that in Columbus.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for all the texts. Keep them coming in, because I know you guys are going to continue the conversation.
Oh, yeah.
We had so much stuff to get to, but the text line was bumping today. So we'll carry some of it over tomorrow here on Canuck Central. Randy Janda will join me then, but Randy Janda going to join you in about 10 minutes. Here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.